This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at willillinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, Computers and You, a topic we take up once a month on the third Monday of the month. Peter Kimball is our guest. He is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST 3 Consortium, Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Listeners, I welcome your questions about computers this afternoon for Peter Kimball. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. No one waiting for us at the moment. Peter, what would you like to start with this afternoon?
Well, there are all sorts of things we can talk about. Did you know that one of the most popular locations for people asking for information about WILL is Kentucky?
I did not know that.
I didn't either. Champaign and Urbana come in first and second.
How do Kentucky. We know this?
Google has an interesting site called Google Trends in which you can look up and see if you've got an extra, 15 or 20 minutes or an hour to kill, what the search term popularities are broken down by country, by state in the United States, or even by city. So Hangover, for example, the most popular search term or the most popular locations from which Hangover is entered as a search term are three countries, Ireland, the United Kingdom, and the United States.
Very interesting.
That probably goes up shortly after New Year's.
Yeah. Now, you told Harriet and you told us about this Google Trends and Hot Trends. And so this morning I had a little bit of time, and so I went to the Hot Trends thing. And and on the Hot Trends is a debut from Amazon. It's an e-book reader. That was a hot trend. Also, the hot trend story was about the departure, the announcement this morning that Michigan's football coach is going to step down. He's going to leave the Wolverines and go into retirement after the bowl game.
Well, I'm sure there are some Michigan fans out there as well as some Michigan non-fans out there. So
interested in that.
We should probably stay more with the Kindle thing from Amazon.
Why don't we come back to that topic, because we've got a listener waiting to talk with us on line four on the toll-free line. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I hope this is an okay topic here. I'm not sure which computer guy you got. Sorry. But I've got a PC that I use once every 4 months or so, and it's got the Windows XP on it, and Windows XP asked me for my password to come in to get my little section of the computer. But ding-dang if I can remember that. Is there any way of getting around that little bit of security?
There are ways of getting around it, but I'm trying to think if there's any real convenient way. So you've used it. It's asking for a password. You're sure there is a password. Sometimes it may ask for a password, and if one had never been entered, you can just press the enter key to go right past it, i.e. there would be a blank password. I assume that's not the case for you.
I will try that. I think I did give it a password, but I've tried all the passwords I have on various computers and capitalized and uncapitalized, and I just can't hit on the right thing.
And the username, as far as you know, there aren't additional usernames, so it's actually probably prompting you for whatever the username is and says, give me the password for, Jane
right,
or Mary or,
right.
or Jane or something.
It's set up for, it's set up for me.
One thing you can try, one would hope that this is not the case, but Windows can, when it's first installed, be installed without an administrator password. So you could attempt to log on with the username administrator and see if just pressing enter gets you past that. That's not a good way to leave a computer, but there are some default installations of Windows XP that will do that.
Okay.
And the other option is, I would... on another computer, obviously, because you can't get onto this. And I would, if I had a bit more time here, I would search for missing password. The whole goal of the password, of course, is to prevent people who don't know it from getting on.
Right.
You certainly could reinstall in place Windows XP. That's kind of a major thing to do. It doesn't wipe out your previous data but it would be one way of getting there. If you have another machine and you simply need, we're getting more and more complex and detailed depending on how critical it is, you can also take the disk drive that's there if there's critical data on it that you must have and add it to another Windows machine and just use it as an external drive because it's unlikely that your disk has been encrypted. That's a setting that you would have to have specifically requested.
Okay, so I can get to the stuff on that drive.
Yes. You would simply have to make sure if this is an older machine, it's probably using an enhanced IDE or the kind of cable, the way it talks to the machine is not going to be the same as on a lot of newer machines, but any machine that's of its general generation of a few years ago, it's relatively simple to add a second drive, and I've done that occasionally to transfer from one machine, typically when I'm going to retire it and I don't want to transfer it all online, is just unplug the drive from one and plug it into the other. If the new machine that you have does not allow you to, or if you don't have a compatible machine, there are devices that are not terribly expensive that would allow you to plug in this drive. You still need to plug it into the power, but you could actually communicate by using an external adapter that connects from the USB port on your new machine to the old-fashioned IDE connector on this disk drive. You still have to get power to it, but there are several ways around it. But try the administrator password in case it's blank. And short of that, on another machine, see if you get any other suggestions doing a Google or other search for, lost my password, Windows XP lost password. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot that you're going to be able to do.
Right, I understand that. That's
one of the, I'm totally tongue-in-cheek here, but, that's why a lot of people write their passwords down. Do not put it on a sticky note attached to the to the screen or even maybe in the same room. But, those passwords, which are so logical when you choose them, and that's about all I can really suggest for you.
Thanks. I'll give those a try.
Thanks for the call. Other calls are invited this afternoon for Peter Kimball, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. So Kindle, back to Kindle.
Well, I was last caller was hanging up, I was doing a search, and the first thing that came up, and I'd want to look into it a little bit more, but it is the Your Lost Windows Password Solution. It is a bootable CD. You can download it. It apparently is free for the download, and it will essentially wipe out previous passwords, which, of course, means that, as often is the case, if somebody has physical access to the computer, mm-hmm. it's not really safe. Passwords can keep it safe, more safe online, but not if somebody has physical access. But that would be another thing to do, and there are several options. Just do a search if you want to find this site for the what I did was just Lost Password XP at Google, and lots of sites come up.
So we're really not all that secure.
No, but if you have access to the machine, you're not that secure anyway, unless you've taken the extra step and encrypted all of the data on the hard drive, in which case you lose that password. And, that's the whole point. If the password is gone, so is the data, you might want to do if you travel a lot with a laptop in case it gets stolen, because you don't really want to have all your tax returns with your Social Security number and your online banking information available to somebody who steals the physical machine.
And it's very easy to lose those when you're traveling.
It is. Either inadvertently.
Turn your back or leave it. You forgot it in the rental car or bang, it's gone.
Yep, it is.
You're not going to see it again.
Yep, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, now so, Kindle.
Kindle. Well, it is positioned, and of course this has been the statement a number of times about so-called e-books or electronic books. None of them have really been successful yet. They've been a little bit inconvenient, difficult to read, low battery life. Amazon is presenting this as a much more capable device. It's not cheap. It's about $400. But it uses it doesn't use a backlight, so that's one of the faults of a lot of portables and handheld e-book readers, the backlight, which is used in a lot of LCD panels, for example, on a laptop machine, consumes a lot of power, and so that makes battery life fairly short. And the last thing you want to do is be on a trip and you're up to the last three chapters of your novel and the battery's gone dead, and so you just have to sit there and wait until you can recharge it. But this doesn't use a backlight, and it's so far just black on a white background. It is not a device that requires connecting to a PC. It can communicate itself. According to what I've read, Amazon now has 90,000 titles at various prices that you can download, cheaper than a paperback, but of course you have to factor in the cost of this machine. It would probably be kind of a neat little, well, not so little, a neat semi-major Christmas gift for somebody who does a lot of reading and is on the road a lot.
Yeah, and it comes in at 10.3 ounces, speaking
of
weight.
Which is thinner than some of those big paperbacks, and I think it holds a couple hundred paperbacks, too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to take a look at it. And it can hold, according to this article, it can hold 200 books, but you can put in, you can put a memory card in there, and so you can actually be carrying around a library. You can have 1,200 books, or about 1,000 books, excuse me.
More than you'd ever be able to read in on most trips, unless you're on some major expedition.
But if you're on the road a lot, that could be a handy way.
It really could.
You know,
yes.
To rather than carrying around or buying books as you travel, and then what do you do with it? You got a suitcase full of books.
It's early. There aren't a lot of reviews yet. It was just announced, but it's certainly something that people could look up, and I'm sure there will start to be a number of reviews as people start to look at it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what it feels like or looks like, and because there's only a tiny picture here. It looks, you just, I don't even know how you can, if you can adjust the type to make it larger.
I would suspect, one would assume that that's what you could probably do. There is it's a little bit bigger than a standard paperback book, but not much, and of course it's very light, so. It will be interesting to see. I would certainly, I don't think I'm going to go out and buy one for myself, but I would certainly detour a little bit to pick one up and try it out at some store. I presume this is going to be pretty widely available. Whether it's going to make it out into the distribution channels in time for the holiday shopping season, I don't know. That's coming upon us amazingly quickly now.
Yeah. Well, speaking of early in the life of a device, it's still early in the life of Windows Vista.
It is. And the life of Windows XP keeps being extended. There has been, as often the case in the past, a bit of a resistance to adopting a brand new operating system such as Windows Vista until many of the bugs have been squashed in it, or the performance hang-ups, which is often done in a major update or patching process, which Microsoft calls service packs. So it was not until after Windows XP came out with its first service pack called SP1 that it gained as wide acceptance as it does. And many are expecting the next or the first service pack for Vista to come out early in 2008. And a number of companies certainly are waiting for that to happen before they make the decision to move to Vista. The most common place that people will get Vista now is in new machines. That's by default is what you will find if you get a new Windows machine, a laptop, or a desktop machine. Although even there, Microsoft has now extended the life of Windows XP to the companies that sell computers, such as Hewlett-Packard and Dell and all the rest, so that up through currently at least June of 2008, many companies will sell you a new computer with either Windows XP or with Windows Vista installed on it.
Hmm. Now, what about manufacturers of add-on hardware devices? Where are they in terms of making Vista-compatible products?
That's getting a lot better. The mainline add-on devices are, for the most part, compatible by now because Vista has been out for months. And the problem in its initial release was that there were a lot of programs or the little bits and pieces of programs that are called drivers that allow the computer to talk to other devices, such as scanners and such as printers and such, that weren't really taking advantage of the kinds of things that Vista could do, or worse yet, were taking shortcuts that Vista no longer allows, and so people would find that especially some of their older hardware would no longer function once they installed Windows Vista, it would function, but they couldn't talk to Vista because they were not speaking the proper underlying language. Most of that for current manufacturers and current products has been addressed now, but somebody who has a really old device, especially if it's from a company that has merged or has gone out of business, there may never be a way of getting that to work with a Vista machine. But the number of such products and such devices is becoming vanishingly small. Well, maybe not vanishingly small, but it's much better now than it was before. And Microsoft also has a site that you can go to, if you go to Microsoft and click on some of the Vista links, that will make an attempt to examine your current hardware and give you a report saying, we've got drivers for this, we're not sure about this device, and this device, we don't have any way of currently dealing with it. It's something like the update, Windows Vista Update Advisor or some such.
Okay. Let's take another call. A listener on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Are you well informed about Macs?
Partially. I could certainly give it a shot and perhaps refer you to another resource.
Well, actually, I have an old G4 Mac, and I know that the new System Leopard has come out, and I wanted to be able to upgrade my son and daughter, wife's computers as well. And I just wondered if it's worth it to upgrade the Mac, the G4, or should I just wait and get the latest one?
Well, if you've got a choice between, if money is not an issue, the choice between upgrading a G4 and getting a nice new Macintosh, obviously you're going to be happier with the performance of the new one. Leopard was originally touted as not really, even though there's a lot of Apple marketing excitement about it, but it was not considered to be nearly the major upgrade that going into OS 10.4 was. The problems, Leopard was getting a fair amount of criticism in terms of security. There were several steps backwards. The firewall, for example, had some really odd settings. And just last Thursday, Apple released a major packet of fixes and adjustments for Leopard. That is going to improve a lot of the major criticism that was there before. It was a huge number. We were just talking about the service packs for Microsoft. This is kind of like the equivalent of a service pack, although Apple doesn't call it that, for the Leopard operating system. And anybody who is using it should absolutely get logged on as an administrator on their machine and download that update. There are some things, however, that still don't quite work properly. Some programs that have been broken, in a sense, by the way Leopard does things. One that's probably not going to be too much of a concern for you, but it's a concern for those who are into gaming. World of Warcraft doesn't work at all under Leopard.
Good.
Skype, however, the voiceover internet protocol program for making telephone calls doesn't work well. Or at all.
I wouldn't use that anyway.
Okay. And then there are some reports, a large number of reports from users of various Adobe products, including Photoshop, InDesign, and Illustrator, about programs not launching or crashing under Leopard when they didn't before. That's much more of a concern, and Apple is certainly going to be addressing that, because a lot of the users of the Mac platform have traditionally been those in many of the design areas where Photoshop,
right,
Illustrator, and such. So I would say it's not something you have to run out and get. There are some kind of nice things. There's the way back capability, and there's a better finding. If you have an external drive, you can tell your Mac that you would like to return it, and it's named after the Wayback Machine back in the
Sherman
and Peabody, and you can actually restore your Mac to the way it was last Tuesday or a week ago, Monday or something. That, of course, requires a fair amount of space, and typically a lot of people do that just by plugging in an external drive.
I do have a question. You told me just like Thursday that did all this stuff. Do they announce this generally, or...?
What will generally happen if you log on to your Macintosh and you've got a 10.5 Leopard Macintosh, and you're logged on with administrative privileges rather than as a limited user, and you've got an internet connection, what will happen is you'll be notified by a pop-up box that there are updates available and that they're important.
Okay.
I believe that you could.
I was thinking that, okay, I'll go ahead and wait for another 6 months to see if those things are fixed, and then maybe I'll buy another one.
Well, that would be fine. There's certainly nothing wrong with going ahead and getting Leopard now, especially that they've released this major packet of updates. But
yeah,
like any new set of software, and even though this is a revision, it's not radically new, they're bound to be bugs and things. And so, but
yeah,
it's better now than it was.
I think I'll just wait then. Okay, well, thanks very much.
You're quite welcome.
You're welcome.
It was kind of... Oh, go
I'm
ahead.
Sorry.
I was going to say, before Apple released the latest updates, one of the headlines in one of the reviews says, Leopard, more holes than spots.
Mm.
But many of those have now been patched and fixed. And that will be, of course, built into the shipping version of new Macs relatively soon. Anything that comes out of the factory from now on will have all of those patches and such in it.
Well, when you go to the store or when you're online, is there a way to tell that those updates are on that particular machine?
I'm not.
Does it say new and improved?
It's not going
spots
to say new and improved. There will be a way that you can look at details and see that you've got operating system 10.5 point whatever the number is. But it's not really that obvious. The simplest thing to do would be to, as an administrative user, to go to the update, under the Apple menu, go to the update site and see if it comes up, because then it examines your system, looks to see what's available. It's the same sort of thing with the Windows update, and you can set that to happen automatically as well. And clearly everybody, whether they're using Windows or Macintosh, should absolutely have that set so that they get the latest versions of the fixes and patches and adjustments. Certainly the malicious software writers are quite aware of that, and so if you don't keep at least a little bit ahead of them, or at least install these things when they become available from either Apple or Microsoft, you're just sort of sitting there.
A sitting duck.
Yes, indeed.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Peter Kimball. We're talking this afternoon about computers. This is the topic we take up once a month on the third Monday of the month. Our guest, Peter Kimball, is Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST 3 Consortium, Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Listeners, you can join us with a telephone call this afternoon, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, if you upgrade or if you get a new system, you get a new machine, is it very difficult, is it very complicated to move your stuff, your documents, your files, from one system, from one machine to another?
It is supposed to be quite easy. What can go wrong, of course, sometimes will go wrong, but both the updates from there are two kinds of updates. Now, if we're getting a new machine, then both Microsoft and Apple have a facility, assuming that both machines are either connected somehow, either typically through a network or simply through what's called a peer-to-peer connection, where you simply don't really have a home network, but you've connected the two machines. And the details of how one would do that are included in the instructions. But they are, in many cases, going to make the attempt to migrate not only all your software, but all of your settings, if you've got your favorites for your browser and everything else, so it can look and feel almost the same. At least it'll look almost the same, taking into account that if you're moving from XP, for example, to Vista, it clearly has a different look. But all of your underlying functioning programs and your documents, more critically, will be there. If that doesn't work, and sometimes, especially if you're moving from one version such as XP to Vista, there may be older software that you have that, while it will work under Vista, won't work as well as a newer version. But it's generally almost as easy to reinstall that software to get the latest versions from as an update if necessary, if you've got a 5-year-old version of Microsoft Word, for example, and install it fresh. mostly what people are concerned about is not so much the software. Yes, you can get it on, but the software, if you've lost it, or if, you know, something, let's take the example that we were talking about earlier, if your computer is stolen, you're not concerned about the software that's gone. You're concerned about your individual data, right, and your personal information. And there's generally not nearly as much of that. And so though both Apple and Windows make facility for doing an easy transfer, even if they don't, there probably is not that much material in the form of documents and photos and such. And it's probably not scattered all over the place. So there are manual backup or manual transfer processes that you could use as well. Mm-hmm. But there are automatic ones.
Oh. We've got another listener waiting to talk with you, Peter, on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. I also have a Mac question. I listened to you earlier, and that's good information, the warning that I got. I just bought Leopard. I'd like to upgrade from Panther. My question is, can I do that without having to reload all my software and reset my airport settings and that sort of thing?
And you're updating on the same machine, correct?
Yes.
Yes, you should be able to do that without any difficulty. The update process from you'll have a choice when you put in the CD. How do you want to update? What you don't want to do is choose the wipe it clean and start all over, because then you would have to reinstall everything. You just want to choose update and migrate. I'm not sure the precise wording, but you will be given that option.
Okay. And Thanks very much. I like your program.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions are invited, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Let's take another call. Listener on line two, good afternoon.
Well,
hi there.
Yes.
Hi. I'm overwhelmed. My son had a business and all, and I used his computer and all that, and, you know, I'm in the process of, getting a computer, and I was waiting for the Vista. Vista's that much better? I mean, it's really new and improved and all that kind of stuff, once they get the bugs out?
Vista certainly is better in a number of areas. Its inherent security is better than Windows XP. There are certainly a lot of appearance changes, and so it's got more of a, on a new machine especially, that's got the graphics processing power. It's a very pretty operating system, and a number of things can be done very easily on it. Most of the functionality that you have, though, outside of the security area, it's not going to make a great deal of difference in being able to do email, or be able to do word processing, or being able to work with images. My general recommendation to people who ask, if they're going with a new machine and they don't have a particular set of software or older devices that they must use, especially because many of the companies, while you can get Windows XP on some of their models, many of the models are only available because of the way they happen to be shipping them with Vista. And I've known a number of people who are generally quite happy with Vista.
Mm-hmm.
So
the other one is that some of my friends are encouraging me, you know, to an Apple or a Mac or some other. But and I'm also considering a laptop. There's two systems on that. You can use one or the other on the Mac. Is that right? You have access. You can use the Vista, and you can use the whatever that Zephyr or whatever that system is. Is that right?
There is software, because the new Macs for the last few years have been running on an Intel processor chip, which is the same underlying microprocessor that runs on Windows machines.
Okay,
it's quite possible to have the Macintosh hardware run either Windows, and it could be XP or Vista, as well as the Macintosh operating system. In order to do that, you need a program that will allow you to switch between the two.
Mm-hmm.
One of them that comes from Apple, which is now included with the new version of the operating system, which is called Leopard, is called Boot Camp, and that will allow you to switch from one system to the other. And actually, you don't no longer in the current version of Boot Camp have to reboot the machine. It can actually switch. But you do have to close. Essentially, it closes down your Macintosh session and opens up a Windows session. There is other commercial software that allows you to switch on the fly. One of those that's very popular is called Parallels. But in either case, what you would need to do is, if you get the new Macintosh, it of course will come with the Macintosh operating system, and if it's a new one, it'll be the Leopard, the 10.5.
Mm-hmm.
But you would need to purchase Microsoft Windows XP or Vista. And I think if you're going to purchase just the operating system now, you would have to purchase Vista. The only way XP is available is from computer manufacturers, which still wouldn't be a problem. It should run acceptably, especially if, as everybody should who's contemplating a new computer, make sure that they get plenty of the built-in random access memory or RAM. These days, 2 gigabytes is pretty much a minimum expectation. 3 or 4 would be better.
Okay, 3 or 4. The other one is that, you know, I'm looking here at the Consumer Report and all that. Is that a good sort? I mean, it becomes overwhelming when you think of it, trying to decide, even, you know, rather than, you know, Apple, you know, whether Dell or whether, you know, some of these others would be better. I don't know. How do you, is there a better source?
Well, Consumer Reports certainly is an excellent resource in terms of the data they get from their readers in terms of happiness and satisfaction with the support they get from various companies. So what kind of support does Dell give you, or does Hewlett-Packard give you, or does Apple give you if you've got issues or problems?
Apple comes out really top.
Yes. Although Apple, although it does very well, it does not quite get the same rankings that it used to, in large part because they're now having more and more people who are adopting Macs. And, of course, they've got so much support that they need to do for the iPhone and all the iPods and such. But certainly that is a factor. In terms of their general advice, it's pretty accurate. I would also do a search if you're interested in pursuing a little bit more. Go to something like Google or Yahoo or one of the other search engines and do a search for the term. For example, if you want to compare Dell's and Hewlett-Packard's, do a search for review and then include Dell and HP. And there are some sites that are obviously more biased seeming than others. And there are some that seem to be much more objective. So that would be a good, if you look at 3 or 4 or 5 or half a dozen of those various sites, you'll get a fairly good feeling. I think that you probably wouldn't have any difficulty with, because the reputation is generally quite good with many of the major manufacturers, and that would include the ones that you had mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The old Apple versus Windows question is pretty much age old. There is some software that runs perhaps if people are having to work with some of the same software that they do in business, there are some software packages that only run on Windows, but now you can run Windows on a Macintosh. All else being equal, you pay a little bit more for the equivalent capability on the Mac side than on the Windows, but that's because there's one company making Macintoshes and dozens making Windows machines.
And then finally, in terms of virus, and probably as Mac becomes more popular, but is it less likely in terms of the viruses than because don't they go for the big?
That's been primarily the case, certainly, and the and now that they have some additional patches that they've released to the firewall for the new Mac operating system, it's fine. But I was just looking at some articles from just within earlier this month. Some of the first Trojan, that's a particular kind of virus that comes in and does things that you don't want it to do behind the scenes, such as, you know, redirect your banking transactions to non-official sites. And some of the first Trojans that are professionally, and yes, they do have professional malicious software writers because it's a big business, but some of the first Trojans designed specifically for the Mac operating system have been found spreading in the wild. One article that I'm looking at from eWeek is entitled Fortress Mac is gone. So it's no longer quite the impenetrable fortress that many people thought it was. You still need to have antivirus software, a firewall.
Oh, yeah.
Having said all of that, there are fewer viruses and malicious software exploits out there currently for the Macintosh than for Windows. But complacency is not called for no matter which kind of system you're using.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. We've got about 10 minutes left in this portion of the afternoon magazine. If you've got a question about computers, give us a call, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. We've got a listener coming in now on line one, and as soon as we get that all squared away, we'll go to that caller. This is the Afternoon Magazine, Computers and You, a topic we take up once a month on the third Monday of the month, and we've got that caller ready to go now. Line one, hi. Line one?
A fairly new Dell with Windows XP on it, and I do audio files with my digital camera, and I have trouble working with them. I can't burn them to a CD. I can store them on the computer sometimes and listen to them on the computer. And they're in WAV format. Is there? Do I need to get new more software to handle those, or what?
So you can listen to them. This is coming from your digital camera. And you can listen to them on the computer, which you would expect to be able to, because the WAV file is the Windows audio video file, and simply Windows Media Player can play that successfully. So
okay.
That is the case. You can listen to them generally, but you're having trouble burning them to a CD in a format that can then be read. I'm not quite sure where the difficulty is that you're having.
Well, when I try to burn them, I get a message, can't read this format, or what program do you want to choose to read this format?
And the files that you're attempting to transfer are WMV files?
WAV, I think.
Oh, yeah, WAV, okay. What what program do you know are you using to do the burning?
Oh, I'm not sure. Just Windows Media Player, I think.
Okay. What you might try doing, and of course you realize that if you transfer these files as WAV files, unless it's a relatively new CD player, since it's not in a format that a lot of CD players will read, you may not be in. They're going to be able to necessarily plug this or just take the CD and plug it into a regular CD player and get it necessarily. But because it's not the same as an audio CD, but getting it burned in the first place, there are a number of programs that certainly could handle it. Roxio, R-O-X-I-O, certainly makes a number of them that's bundled with many computers that have CD burning hardware installed in them. It's a little bit difficult to diagnose that without a bit more information. One of the things that can also be done under Windows XP is you can simply use Windows Explorer and drag the files that you wish onto the icon that represents your CD burning drive, and then they'll be stored, and see if Windows Explorer can handle it. So that would be one approach that you might take as well.
Okay.
But certainly,
right. And I usually can transfer them to like a flash drive or an SD chip, but even one of those I have trouble. I've got one flash drive with 4 gigabytes, and I can't play anything off of it. And I get the same message. I get
When you're transferring it, but when you try to play it. Is that correct?
When I try to play it.
And
correct.
When you're going to the CD-ROM, it transfers okay, but when you play it, it can't play it.
Right. It seems to have all the files on the flash drive, but when I try to play them, I get a message. Oh. I forget. I'm not at my computer right now, but something like it can't read or not the right codec or something like that.
Well, yes, the codec is simply the program such as Windows Media Player or others that is used to play back the audio or play back video in the case of a video codec. So back to the problem with these CDs, are you having trouble burning the CDs, or once the CD has been burned and it's ready to go, that's when you can't play what's on it?
I can't burn them.
Oh, okay. So there's actually a couple of different issues here. One is burning it. It would be one thing if you could burn it, but then the files couldn't be played. If you can't burn it, then I would go back and try either the Internet Explorer, not Internet, I'm sorry, the Windows Explorer technique, or one of the commercial and often bundled, in fact, it may even be someplace on your machine, the Roxio software, and there are others as well.
Okay, yeah, that, I've heard of, somebody suggested Nero.
Which is another one. Nero is, I believe they've got a relative, relatively inexpensive version, and Nero is certainly has also high versions. Nero as in, you know, burning CDs, and Nero fiddling while Rome burns, etc., is where part of that name came from. But yes, it's also well-known and well-regarded.
How much money are you talking about for this?
Well, if you go to the high end, it's probably a few hundred dollars. At the low end, it should be under $100, and there may or may not be something that's even cheaper than that. I haven't looked lately, but it'd be easy enough to do a quick search. In fact, you could probably just go to the Nero site or do a Google search for Nero, and that would give you a link fairly high up in the list to the actual Nero site, which may or may not be Nero.com. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I saw some for, I think it was $79.
Yeah, that sounds fairly typical.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks. I'll
okay.
try the Windows Explorer and see
okay.
if I can.
And good luck with that.
Yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome. Next, we take a call on toll-free line 4. Hi.
I'm glad to get a hold of you. I have experienced something just while the program has been going on.
Okay.
And
well, hopefully this is your lucky day, then.
Let's not put hope in it. Let's just do it.
Okay. All right.
I have been having a problem over the last couple, three, 4 days that all of a sudden I'm losing all of my storage in my C drive. You know, I mean, I'm down. When I just checked it before I came on air, I was down to 15 megabytes.
Which is awfully small.
Really? Yes, I think it's 15 above zero, right?
Yes.
Okay. Then when I decided, well, I'll go to Internet Explorer, I'm coming up with a block that says file download security warning. Do you want to save this file? Name NavCandl, CAVCANCL.
Spell that again, please.
CAVCANCL.
Huh. Oh, Cav.
And it's from ieframe.dll.
Hmm. Don't recognize that off the top of my head, but clearly, if you've only got.
Before.
Yeah. Clearly, if you're getting the. If you have that little space.
Well, I ran CC, you know, CCleaner.
And you're running Windows XP or
yes. Office?
Okay. And so there is a nav cancel, NavCancl program, but you said it started with a C.
NAV.
Oh, NAV, okay.
CL.
And this is, let's see, Windows update. So there's all sorts of various things. It's not now. Can you just cancel out of that and say cancel? I don't want to do anything with it.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And then from Internet Explorer, one of the things you can do now, there could well be a problem in attempting to download this and nav cancel.
Well, that's the thing. I'm coming up with a blank page.
Okay. But that's
MSM.com.
Okay. Let's see. You may have an incredible amount of space set aside for temporary Internet folders and such, and you want to get rid of as much of that as possible.
Now, what is that?
Well, any time that you visit a web page, the various images and other information on that page are stored for a while for later use on your computer system, on your hard drive, so that it doesn't
have to. You're talking about history?
It's more than just the history. The history is just a listing of the places you've been. The actual content is also stored. So if you've been to a number of art sites, for example, and you've been looking at some of the Impressionist masters, those images are still being stored on your machine, taking up perhaps quite a bit of space.
Well, I do have a direct you know, favorites. On,
so, well, favorites, that's okay. It's the actual sites that you visited. Here is what you can do to clear out a lot of that, which may give you a lot more space available.
Okay.
And that may, because all sorts of odd things can start happening when you're down to that little memory. So
don't
a couple of things.
Yeah.
In Internet Explorer first, you can go to the Tools menu.
Right.
And then choose Internet Options.
Right.
And then you will see that partway down that first page under the General tab, it says Temporary Internet Files. And there's a button you can click there to delete the files. What that means is you're not going to delete anything that you really have to have, and it's not going to change your favorites or any of your bookmarks.
Mm-hmm.
What it's going to do is the next time you visit any sites, rather than being able to pull those images off your disk, it's going to have to download them again. But there's a good chance that there are a whole lot of files that you're never going to be looking at again, and downloading them a second time is not that big a deal.
Now, I've just pressed the tool. You're talking the upper right?
Yes, and if you're in Internet Explorer and you've chosen Tools.
Yes.
And then you
have
the
Internet Options.
Okay. And in Internet Options, over at the left, there's a General tab.
Yes.
And
I've got that.
And halfway down that page, there's something that says Temporary Internet Files, or words to that effect. I'm using a slightly older version.
I have Browsing, I have Search, and I have Tabs.
Okay, so you're using Internet Explorer 7 then, right?
Right.
Okay, which I don't have on here. There is probably under Browsing someplace something that says information about temporary Internet files or pages viewed.
Yeah, files, history, cookies, save passwords.
Okay, files, under files, what you'll want to do is there should be an option to delete the files.
Okay, delete all?
Yes. And that's not deleting any of your other information. It's simply deleting the files that – it simply means that the next time you go to a website, it may take a little bit longer to download those files again. But that could be a huge amount of space.
Well, right now I just did what you're talking about, and I ran through in about 5 seconds.
Okay. Well, that implies that there was not a lot of space to be saved. Are you running Windows XP, did you say?
Yes.
Okay. So the other thing you can do is you can go to the Windows menu, and I may not be able to tell you all of this here, but under the Windows menu, Programs, Accessories, I believe, on XP. But again, I don't have that machine in front of me. I'm using an old Windows 2000 machine here, which as soon as they exceed their pledge drives, they'll be able to update their machines, everybody. But there should be something there, an option that says something like administrative tools. You may have to hunt around for it. And one of them is under administrative or computer administration or something, there will be a choice to find extra disk space, and it will scoot along and look for all sorts of temporary files and other things and make suggestions about how you could get rid of them. It may take a while, but you really are going to have all sorts of other problems until you have more hard drive space. So
okay.
That would be what I would try to fix
all
first.
Right. Well, we'll be back next month.
We're out of time space.
We're out of time. We are out of time. Peter Kimball will join us in January. Next month, Greg Klein will be with us. Computers and You. Once a month, third Monday of the month. Peter, thanks so much.
You're quite welcome.